Shas Illuminated presents the following shiur by Rabbi Levi Langer. Maseches Yevamos has been dedicated Le'iloi Nishmas Reb Moshe Yaakov ben Reb Nosson Yehuda and Reza Leia Bas Yaakov.
Maseches Yevamos, Daf Yud Beis. The Gemara here on Amud Aleph discusses the case of a Tzoras Bitoi Mema'enes, which is to say that Reuven died and he had two wives. One of them was a daughter of Shimon the Yovam, but this daughter was a ketana, and she was only married rabbinically, a kedushin derabbanan, to Reuven, the original husband. And this ketana, subsequently, after the death of Reuven, does miyon. She is memayin in the marriage that she had to Reuven, which she is able to do even after the death, as long as she's still a zekuka liyibum. What is this concept of miyun? So as we know, Chazal enacted that for a ketana who's married only midrabanan, that the halacha is that she's able to refuse the marriage, and that annuls the marriage retroactively, and thereby she would go free and she would not need to have any get. So really, when this ketana does her miyun, it really should retroactively completely annul the original marriage, and it comes out that her tzora, the tzoras bitoy, this tzora is no longer a tzoras erva at all. Even retroactively, she was not nofeles together with an erva, since the bas did yibum and retroactively annulled her marriage. However, the Gemara tells us that we have a svara that mishas nefila niris kitzoras bitoy. To the onlookers, this tzora had the appearance at the time of the nefila, time of the death of Reuven, she had this appearance of being a tzoras erva, and later the onlookers are not going to shake that image free from their minds. Therefore, because of the concern of the niris, we say that this tzoras bitoy me'enes is not allowed. She is asura to be misyabemes to the yovam. That's what the Gemara says. Taisfis asks Akasha over here. Taisfis asks that we have another Gemara later on the bottom of the Amud, where the Gemara discusses a case of Tzoras Islandis, which we'll talk about the Mitzvah Shem a little bit later. The Gemara by the Tzoras Islandis, where we have is a woman that was married to Reuven, and Reuven dies without kids, and she becomes no fellas to Shimon, and she's an islandess, she's unable to have any children, and an islandess is Nesmayet from Asher Tele, the Pasuk, that Pasuk tells us that the islandess is not a Zekuka Liyibom. Since she's not a Zekuka Liyibom, she has an Eishes Ach that does not get Hutar, and the Gemara has a Shitas Rav Asi later on in the Amud that he holds that a Tzoras islandess is also because she is a Tzora of this islandess who does not have any Heter on her din of Eishes Ach. So, according to the opinion of Rav Asi, the Tzoras islandess is also, but the Gemara still tells us later on that, even according to him, if it was Loi Hikir Ba, which is to say that the original husband was unaware of the fact that the woman he married was an islandess, which means that the whole marriage was a mekach tois, because it's betois, he would not have married her had he known that she's unable to have children and she's an islandess. So therefore, that annuls retroactively the original marriage because of the mekach tois. So therefore, in a case like that, even according to Rav Asi, the Tzoras islandess is muteres, she's permitted to the yovam because she's not a Tzoras islandess, since the islandess's marriage was annulled retroactively, was based on a tois. Frektoisis, what is the difference between the two cases on the rabbinic level? On the Torah level, they're identical. The Tzoras Ma'enes and the Tzoras Islandis, Me'ikor Hadin, they ought to be the same thing, since in both cases, either the Miyun, by the case of the Ma'enes, or the Tos, by the case of the Islandis, Shalo Hikirba, in both cases, we have a retroactive annulment of the marriage, which leaves the Erva free, apparently, to Misyabemes, to the Yavam. And yet, by the case of the Mema'enes, we say that since the time of the Nefila, it looked to the onlookers like she's a Tzoras Erva, we don't allow her to get Misyabemes. And by the case of the Islandis, Shalo Hikirba, we don't go with this concern of the island onlookers, apparently thinking she looked like a Tzoras Erva b'shas to Nefila, and we do allow the Tzoras Erva to be Misyabemes, and what's the Chiluk? The Taisus answers, there is a difference between the cases in terms of the fact that by the case of the Mema'enes, she needed to do a Maaseh, a special activity, in order to annul the marriage retroactively. She had to go ahead and actively do a Miyun. Now, She'en came by the case of the islandess, it was unnecessary for her to do anything at all in order for the marriage to get retroactively annulled. It's simply that he had a toss. He was unaware of the fact that she was a islandess, so it was a toys the whole marriage. Only, says Toysis, only by the case of the Ma'enes, where at the time of the Nefila she was apparently a Tzoras Erva. The Tzora was a Tzoras Erva, apparently. And it took an activity, it took a Maisa, a Miyun, a refusing, in order for the Ma'enes' marriage to get annulled retroactively. So there the onlookers remain with their idea that this Tzora is a Tzoras Erva. Masha'en came by the case of the Ma'enes, of the islandess, where it didn't take any Masa at all. Later when you discover that she's an islandess, it didn't take any action at all for her marriage to be retroactively annulled. So therefore, says Tosis over there, the onlookers recognize that the entire original marriage is totally gone, uprooted Lamafreya, and that the Tzora they now see is not a concern at all of a Tzoras Erva. That's Tosis Teretz. There's a lot of Havarsky over here, writes that in his opinion, we could say that according to a fundamental principle, a yesoid, which is stated by Reb Chaim Brisker in the Chiddush Reb Chaim al-Rambam, to explain a difficult Rambam, we could argue that Tosfos Kasha is not shver, and you could offer a straightforward alternative answer to this question, what the chiluk is between the islandess and the mema'enes. I, like Tosfos says, why don't you say that in both cases, the marriage of the islandess shaloi hikir, the marriage of the ma'enes, is upper the mafreya, says Reb Lava Pavarsky, according to Reb Chaim Brisker's yesoid, it will be a chiluk. So what is this Rambam that Reb Chaim Brisker is discussing? The Rambam writes in Perek Yutes of Hilchas Ishus, the bas mima'enes gets mezoinois from the husband. Let's get the basic case down over here. Fellow marries a Katana, a young girl, and it was the Rabbanon to get married. The brothers married her off. So they're married mid Rabbanon, and this Katana was Misya Bemes in her husband. But by the time that she was Misya Bemes, apparently she had given birth to a child, to a daughter. Now the halacha is that if a woman is married to a man and she has a daughter, so there's a tnai ksuva that if the man dies, so the daughter is going to be able to be nizoin from the estate to get sustenance, a constant stipend from the estate until the time that she gets married. So the Rambam tells us that a bas mema'enes, even though her mother has done miyun in the marriage, has refused the marriage, they still say that she's considered to be a daughter of this woman who is married, insofar as the halacha of her receiving mezoinos if the husband would die. That's the Rambam, a difficult Rambam. But before we get to that, the Ravid comments on this Rambam that there's no such a thing. How could you possibly have a bas mema'enes, fract the Ravid? And later on today's daf, on daf Yud Beis, Omid Beis, they're going to have an important yesoid, which Mitzvah Shem will be discussing, called bonim harehen kisimonim, which is to say that we hold that a girl, even if she has not reached the age of godless, of Yud Beis Shonim, Afal Pi Kein, despite that, we still say that if she has a child, if in the very unusual case where a girl of that age of less than 12 give birth to a child, we would still say that that's automatically a simon that she's reached maturity, like we'll discuss later, and that she has a din of a gedoyla. So, says the Ravid, if we're going to have the Gemara that any girl who gives birth, even before the age of 12, is automatically a gedoyla, it's going to follow automatically that she'll be unable to do miyun. And how could the Rambam say that you have this case of a bas mema'enes, where apparently she was born, the daughter was born at a time when the young girl, the mother, had not yet been a mayan, and subsequently was a mayan? It's impossible for her to derive it, because once she gives birth, is unable to be mined. That's the Ravid's kasha. On this, the Magid Mishnah answers, it's not a question, because the Shitas HaRambam is that when the Gemara is going to say later that bonim harei hein kisimonim, what that means is that the giving birth, the birthing, that is the physical indicator that she's reached maturity and she automatically becomes a gedoyla. But the conception, the pregnancy, and the conception, these things could happen even to a girl who's still a katana. This is as opposed to Tosfos Shita. Later on the Yud Beis Amud Beis, Tosfos says that bona harehen kisimona means that even a pregnancy, a conception, cannot take place for a katana, and even if the girl age-wise is apparently a katana, this will be a sign, the fact that she gets pregnant, that she conceived of a child, that will be a sign that she's really a gedoyla, and she automatically has a din of a gedoyla. That's Tosfos Shita, that ibur bonim, the pregnancy, harehen kisimonim. However, the Rambam disagrees with that, says the Magen Mishnah. The Rambam held that only leidas bonim kisimonim, only the giving birth, is a sign that she's considered a gedoyla, physical mature, and therefore have a din of a gedoyla. Ma she'en kein, the pregnancy could take place when she's still a katana. So that's the case of the Rambam. This young girl who's married to this fellow, she becomes pregnant, and she conceives this bas, this daughter, while she is still a katana, and she's still married only midrabanan, and the fetus, the female fetus, the young girl who's an uber at that time, is already at that point labeled a bas of a wife of this fellow, and she already has that label. Now, subsequently, this young girl, the mother, will be able to remain until the birth takes place. She's got another 9 months to remain. She can remain until the birth takes place, because according to the Rambam Shita, only later upon the birth of the children has a din of the of simanim. So therefore, says the Magen Mishnah, that's the case that the Rambam was talking about, where this girl who was a man had already conceived the child, conceived the bas, and subsequently afterwards when the husband dies, that bas who was conceived in the midst of the marriage before the meal took place is going to be able to get the mezoinos. That's what Rambam is coming to say. Zonktav tem de Reb Chaim Brisker, all this is very well, but we still need to understand a very basic point. Why don't we say that now that the mother did do meal, so that uprooted the entire marriage l'mafreya, it annulled it retroactively, so that we look upon this young girl as if she was never married to this fellow, and therefore she, even when she conceived of the bas, we ought to say now, from our standpoint of the present, that we see this as a conception that took place when the young girl was not even married to the husband, in which case there ought to be no Tanai Kasuba and no Mezainois for this bas. That's the question Reb Chaim asks. Why don't we say that the Amion accomplishes an annulment l'mafreya retroactive of the original marriage, and therefore at the time of the conception we ought to see now that it was impossible for the din Tanai Kasuba of Mezainos to kick in. The Reb Chaim says on this a very important principle which he uses to explain this Rambam. Reb Chaim says, here Reb Chaim introduces a concept which actually comes up in a few places in the Achroinim and Masechta Yevamos. It's worth dwelling a moment on this idea, and this is the idea of Mikan Ulahabo L'mafreya. Mikan Ulahabo L'mafreya is a very lumdish idea. It sounds very confusing, actually. Mikan Ulahabo means from now on and in, and L'mafreya means retroactive. How do you have a Mikan Ulahabo L'mafreya? So let's just explain for a moment what this means in the context of Miun and what Reb Chaim demonstrates, how he uses it, what he proves that this idea exists. Reb Chaim says as follows. He says, even though it is true that when a young girl is married with a rabbanon to a husband, and then she refuses him, she rejects him, she does a miyun on him, it's true that that miyun achieves a l'mafre, a retroactive annulment of the marriage. However, says Reb Chaim, that only means that with regard to all halachos that are applicable to her from this day and on, henceforth, we will look upon her as far as those halachos which will kick in now will treat her as a girl who was never ever married, even in the past. So if I want to know from now on, does she need a gent? The answer is we're going to treat her from now on as a girl who was never ever married, even in the past, and therefore is not in. Therefore, if she wishes to marry somebody else, she'll be able to do so from now on without receiving a get. Because from now on, we look upon her as someone who, l'mafreya, has never been married, retroactively. But, says Reb Chaim, let's ask a basic question. We know that a husband is entitled to the mitzios, the finds, found articles, and the ma'ase yodeho, the handiwork of his wife. So this husband, while he was married to this girl for the last few years, a rabbinic marriage, has been receiving her mitzia and her ma'ase yodayim. Is he mechuyev to refund to her from now on the mitzios and the ma'ase yodayim he received from her in these past years? Because from now on, after the miyun, we are looking upon her as someone who retroactively has never been married to him. And this, the answer is, we don't find this. The halacha does not say that she gets back her mitzios and ma'ase yadayim. Why would that be? Says Reb Chaim, the answer is, because as far as our perspective on those days which have already elapsed, we do not change our perspective on that, and we do not say that those days are now viewed l'mafreya in a different way from they were originally viewed, and such we would say that she was never married. We don't say that. We say that as far as our perspective goes upon the days of the past, when at that time she was seen as being married, we still concede that at that time the marriage was in effect. It's only as far as the days to come, the time to come, the Mikana Lahaba, that we look upon her during the Mikana Lahaba days as someone who even retroactively has never been married. Therefore, we have this split perspective upon her. As far as the last few years, when the husband took from her the Masi Adayim and the Mitzirius, we're not re-examining the perspective and changing the perspective upon her. We're saying that as far as those years of the past, she still is seen to have been married then. However, as far as the future goes, we're going to look upon her in all future time, legabe, regarding those dinim that kick in, that are effective for those times of the future, we look upon her as someone who has never been married. So we want to have that she wants to get married for the future, we will say that she can get married without any get. This is the din of Mikan Ulahaba Lamafreya that Reb Chaim demonstrates that it's applicable to a girl who's Mimayim. The Miyun does achieve that retroactively she is seen as someone who has never married, but only insofar as those dinim which will kick in the future, not with regard to changing our perspective on the dinim that already took effect and were already enacted for her dinim, for her days of the past. Says Reb Chaim, therefore, that's going to explain the Rambam Shita why a Bas Mema'enes, who was already labeled his bitoy of his wife at the time when she was conceived, when she was an Ubur B'mei Ima, when she was a fetus in her mother's womb, and at that time she was viewed as a wife's daughter of this man. So even if the mother of this fetus is subsequently Mimayin, which means that after the Mim, we look upon the mother with regard to all future dinim of hers as someone who has never been married, still the Bas of this Mema'enes has already achieved and attained the label of a bas. She's already attained the koyach of someone who the Tnai Ksuva of Mezoines HaBas is applicable to her, that's already been given, that label's already been granted to her at the moment when she was an Ubur B'mei Ima, before the Mian, when she was labeled a Bitoy of this man's wife. So therefore that label is with her and or it stays with her even subsequently, even after the Bas of the Mayan, because the Mian will only be get to this girl that was a Mayan only with regard to dinim that kick in from then on. However, this din, the labeling of her daughter as being a bita of the fellow's wife, that din already took effect earlier and therefore cannot be re-examined even later, even after the Mian. Reb Chaim says, that's in the Rambam, why the Rambam says that a Bas Mema'enes is entitled to get Mezoinois later on. Says on this, Reb David Pavarsky, that if you accept the Yesoid of Reb Chaim Brisker, that he learns from this Rambam, it would follow that Tosfos Kasha here is not Shver, and we would not need to say Tosfos is Teretz. Why? Because what was the Kasha? There should be no difference between a Mema'enes and an Islandess. Both of these, we now see that her marriage is uprooted the Mafre, even retroactively, the case of the Mema'enes, because she has this ability by rejecting the marriage to redefine the marriage as retroactively something which never existed. The case of the Islandess, Shaloi Hikirba, that the husband was unaware of her Islandess status, because it's a toss, and therefore retroactively we now realize that they were never married. So why is it that we given different dinim, that was placed as Kasha, Midrabanon, to the Tzorois? Why is it that only by the Torah and as do we say that Midrabanon, we say that she was looked upon by the onlookers at the moment of the Nefila as someone who was a Torah Serva, and therefore even now we will not allow her to be Mitzvah Benes. Only by Torah Sama'enes, we say this, not by Torah Sama'enes. Why, says Tosis? Zokta David Pavarsky, because according to Reb Chaim Brisker's Yisoid, we could say that the case of the Tzoras Islandess Shaloi Hikirba, where we now realize that Lamafreya, we were under a misimpression all along, it was a mistake, there was never any marriage whatsoever in existence in any shape or form, the husband was never married, he had a mistaken notion, a mistaken understanding of the nature of this woman. Over there, even if the onlookers are under an erroneous notion and they thought at the moment of the Nefila that there was in the fila of a Tzora Serva, doesn't make any difference. It's impossible for that original marriage of the islandess to achieve any dinim at all, even on the rabbinic level, even to give the Tzora status of a Tzora Serva but the Rabbanon because of the onlookers, he can't achieve any dinim whatsoever, that original marriage, because we now see that the whole thing was erroneous and never existed at all in the first place. That's by an islandess Shaloi Hikirba, Dr. Pavarsky. Masha Ein Kein, by the case case of the Mema'enes. The Mema'enes was married originally, and even now that she's doing her Miyun, that's not succeeding in changing our perspective on that original state of affairs during the original time period of the marriage. She was married then, and we recognize that that marriage did exist. It's only insofar as new dinim that kick in from here on and in that we're going to say we look upon her as someone who has never married. But al-Koponim, there is ample room there for the Rabbonah to come in with their Gezerah and say that since at the time of the Nefilah, the Tzoras Erva was seen by the people as a Tzoras Erva. So therefore, even now that now we have a new retroactive perspective on the marriage of the Mema'enes, we still are going to say that because of the Gezerah's Haroyim, the concern for the onlookers, we're going to continue to give the Tzoras Erva that Isur of a Tzoras Erva by the Rabbonah. So because there's ample room to do that, because the original marriage of the Mema'enes is not considered to have vanished totally retroactively. We still recognize that insofar as the original days of the marriage are concerned, during for the dying span of those days, we saw her as someone who was married. So therefore, the Rabbanan can come in and kick in and say that the Tzoras Erva even now is going to be given that din to the Rabbanan of the Tzoras Erva, because you have that trigger, that ability to trigger this din on the Rabbanan level, because the Mema'enes' marriage has not been totally uprooted in a complete l'mafreya manner. That's what Rabbi Blavatsky says, that according to Rabbi Chaim, we could answer to his question of the difference between the Tzoras Erva Shaloi Hikirba and Tzoras Mema'enes without needing Tosfos' answer that he works out based on this notion that the Mema'enes needed to do a Maisa and the Erva did not. According to Rabbi Chaim, we could avoid the need to say that answer. The Gemara goes on, and at the bottom of the Omud, as we mentioned before, it discusses the case of a Tzoras Eilinus. This is an Eilinus Shehikirbo. The husband knew exactly what he was getting into when he married her, that she would be unable to have children, so there's no toss in the marriage. And subsequently, when that husband dies, and the Eilinus together with the Tzora falls Ligibum to the Yavam, the halacha, according to the opinion of Rav Asi, is that the Eilinus patters her Tzora from being in the Zekuka Ligibum. Why is that? So like we mentioned, that the Achronis speak this out, that the Eilinus, because she's not no fellas Ligibum at all, there is no heter eshas ach on this Eilinus. Her eshas ach status relative to the Yavam is totally unimpaired. It's a complete eshas ach erva klape relative to the Yavam. Therefore, the Eilinus, as in terms from the perspective of her eshas ach, has the ability to pater her tzora. That's the opinion of Rav Asi. We do not paskin like Rav Asi, like the Rava says on the bottom of the Omud and on top of Omud Beis, that Hilchasa, the final halacha, is that tzoras Eilinus muteris. That's number one. Rava says that the halacha is that the tzora of the Eilinus is zekuka liyibim and muta to the midas yabemis, to the Yavam. And the second halacha, va'afilu hikerba, okay, that even if he knew all along that she was an Eilinus and the marriage was effective, afal pike and her tzora is unimpaired in terms of her zika, and she could be misyabemis to the Yavam. Afilu tzoras bitoi eilinus, that's the second halacha of Rava, even a tzoras bitoi eilinus. What is tzoras bitoi eilinus? Well, what happens if Reuven, the original husband, was married to an eilinus who was also a bas of Shimon? She was a daughter of Shimon. And also Reuven's married to another wife, second wife. Now that Reuven dies, these two women fall to Shimon. One of them is Shimon's own bitoi, and the other is the tzoras bitoi. And certainly, halacha ought to have been that the bitoi patas the tzoras bitoi, who is not the kukwa at all the yibam. However, since in this case the bitoi is an eilinus, therefore she's totally out of it. It's as if she's not even a fellas, and consequently, even though she's a bitoi, since she's an eilinus, she does not have any impact whatsoever on the tzora, and the tzora is able to be misya bemes. That's how the Gemara says. Now Rashi brings down in the name of the Baal Halachas Gedoilois, the Sefer Bahag, that even though the Tzora is apparently a Tzoras Bitoi, we still say that she's even Misyabemes, because, says Rashi, we treat her as a Tzora of an Erva Shaloi B'Mokha Mitzvah, where the Erva that she fell with was Mamish Shaloi B'Mokha Mitzvah, as if the Erva had no Nefilas Mitzvah whatsoever, and the Tzora was the only one alone that fell Liyibam. What does that mean? Well, this is explained a little further in the Parish of Rabbi Avraham Ahor over here, Masechti Yevamos on the Yud Beis. Rabbi Avraham Ahor explains that an eilinus is different from a regular case of an erva who falls Liyibam, and the erva cannot be Misyabemes because of Aleho, Aleho, whichever drosha you go with, whatever system you go with. The erva is not a timis yabemes hitis particular yavam says yavam lahor, but this erva is certainly shayach to the parish of zikas yavam and mitzvahs yavam, and if she would have fallen to somebody else, she'll be able to miss yabemes to some other guy. It's just that she happens to have fallen to this person to whom she's an erva to him specifically. So in her case, at least that's called an afil liyavam, even though it's unable to generate an actual zika, and therefore consequently, if she falls liyavam together with a tzora, she'll pata the tzora. Masha Enkin says yavam lahor by the case of the islanders. Since no matter who she would ever fall yibam to, she would invariably and inevitably unable to have any kind of mitzvah yibam on her because she's ba'atz musa, by her very nature intrinsically, is mufka, is excluded from being able to have the mitzvah yibam. So therefore, an islandess is said to be unable to even be nofelis liyibam at all. And she, every single time she's married together with a co-wife and they fall together liyibam to Shimon, the second brother, we say that it's as if the islandess is not even falling liyibam at all. There's no nefila on the part of the islandess. She's ba'atzmusa, intrinsically excluded from being able to be no fellas liyibam. That's the explanation of Rabbah Manahor. That's why the tzora is totally the kuka and even able to be mis yabemes. The Emi Moshe over here is medayik. He infers from the language of Rashi a clear diuk that Rashi apparently split apart the two totally distinct halachas over here of Rava and understood them to be saying two different points. The first halacha of Rava is that the Tzora's islandess is muteris. Forget about the islandess being any kind of extra relationship. She's not a bitoy. She's a regular. Reuven had two wives. One of them was an islandess. And Ravasi, of course, held the Namar Aleph that the islandess all by herself, by virtue of being an islandess, she now reverts to being a true Eshesach, an unimpacted, unmitigated Eshesach, and will pata the Tzora. And the first halacha of Rava is that the islandess does not pata the Tzora. And then, says the Imam Moshe, its mashma in Rashi is not based necessarily upon this concept that the islandess is not even a fellas at all, and relative to the islandess is as if it is shaloba mokum mitzvah, like Rashi speaks out. So I don't need this then, because apparently Rashi only says this, and Rashi speaks it out, by the second halacha of Rava, which is the case of the tzora's bita islandess. That's where Rashi says, well, okay, here I have a big issue, because the tzora is a tzora of a mass, and she certainly ought to be totally mufka from the din zikas yevamin, so that Rashi has to speak out that even though she's a sort of a bas, afal pikein, we look upon it as if the bas wasn't no fellas liyibam at all, because she's totally excluded from the concept of the mitzvahs yibam, like we said before. But, says the Imam Moshe, it's apparent from Rashi, Rashi would not need this reasoning to explain why we paskan lahalacha, that a tzoras islandess is muteris. Why didn't Rashi need that reason? What happened? What's wrong with Rav Asi's argument on the Aleph that every islandess reverts back to being a true unmitigated Eshesach and therefore what the pater her Torah also din of Eshesach? Why not? Why don't we say that din? And it's apparently not because of Rashi's reason that it's kashalev mokha mitzvah, like we explained. So says the Imam Moshe, the answer to this question is that it depends upon a concept that was discussed by Reb Chaim Brisker, and he brings that he heard this idea from Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim considered a question. We already mentioned this a little bit on Daf Gimel. Some time ago we discussed this question. The question is, we know that all Erevas pater their tzoras. If a bitoy of Shimon falls to Shimon, she not only is pater from the mitzvah yevamin of Shimon, but also pater her tzora, and so too the same is with Imoy, and etc., etc. However, or Imoy is more complicated, but all the cases of Erva always pater the tzora as well. However, says Reb Chaim wanted to argue that there's one erva that does not have this quality of patering the tzora, and that's called an eshes ach min afilo zu, which is to say that Reuven is married to this woman, this wife, and Reuven dies and she falls to Shimon. By definition, she is an eshes ach by virtue of having been married to Reuven. But, said Reb Chaim, that eshes ach relationship is itself what generated the nefilah liyibam. Therefore, even if I'll find some scenario in which the eshes ach is not hutar, which of course normally it's hutar, like we spoke a number of times, the Torah was mechadesh a heter of the eshes ach for the purpose of the zikas yibam and for the bias yibam. But even if I'll find a scenario in which the eshes ach is not hutar, said Reb Chaim, I would still say that the eshes ach label is unable to generate a pattering of the zika and a pattering of the tzora, because, says Reb Chaim, that eshes ach is the relationship that generates an afilu liyibam, so it can't turn back on itself and create a hafkor of the zika, even to pater the tzora. That's what Reb Chaim said. The Reb Moshe said that he believes that Reb Chaim's concept is at the core, it's what underlies the dispute here between Rava and Ravasi, and Rav Chaim is correct according to the Maskonas HaGemara of Rava. Dahainu, in the first tab, which is the opinion of Rav Asi, the Rav Asi says that an island is dos pater hetzora. And why is that? That an island is pater hetzora? That the reason is because since she's an island, she's excluded from the pasuk of asher teleid from having any kind of a ability to do a mitzvah yibam on her. And once she's excluded from asher teleid, she reverts back to having an unmodified, unhuttered, unhetered din of an eishes ach. So now that this island is an eishes ach, she is going to even pater her tzor. That's the opinion of Rav Asi, and it's clear, it says Eben Moshe, that Rav Asi would not be in agreement with this principle of Rav Chaim Brisker that an eishes ach min afilo zum doesn't pater the tzor. Because to the contrary, Rav Asi held that an eishes ach min afilo zum does pater the tzor. That's why the island is able to pater her tzor, because she's an eishes ach from this nefila. However, we do not paskin like Rav Asi, we pass on like Rava, and like Rava comes out that a tzoras island is muteris. And remember that it's meduyik in Rashi, says the Imam Moshe, that we for this we do not need the special idea that Rashi articulates for the tzoras mitoi islandess, which is to say that it's as if the islandess wasn't no phallus at all. For this din of the tzoras islandess, we say even if we view the islandess as being no phallus, she still does not pater her tzora at all. Why not? What happened to Rav Asi's argument that the islandess is a hafkor from the zika because of Asher Teleid? She doesn't have a mitzvah yivamin because the pasuk excludes her Asher Teleid. So now she has an unmodified eishes ach otapata the tzora. The answer is this is where Rava comes in, and he holds that eishes ach min afilo zum does not pata the tzora, which is to say that Rava holds that since her whole label of eishes ach is generated from the marriage to Ruvain, which is what's generating this nefila, and therefore this nefila in the context of this nefila, the eishes ach is viewed as being a siba for her to be no fellas to Shimon, and therefore cannot be served as a hafkor of the zika of the bias to Shimon to pata the tzora. That's why Rava holds two different ideas, says the Emi Moshe. One idea is that a tzora silence is muteris, which is listed separately in the top line of the Gemara and the Beis. Tzora silence is muteris because the Eishes Ach label on the islandess is not able to pater the tzora, like we explained based on Reb Chaim. And a totally second tzveter halacha, a tzora's bita islandess, which is labeled afilu in the language of the Gemara. Afilu tzora's bita islandess, that is a big question. Why doesn't the bita status of the islandess pater the tzora? The Eishes Ach status does not, but let the bita status pater the tzora. So for that, Rashi needs to bring the Bahag. This is a new chiddush, that the reason is that the bitoy islandess is not considered to even be no fellas, since the islandess label makes us someone who's unable to have any shaychus to the parshas of Zikas Yevamin at all, since no matter who she would fall to, like we said, should be unable to have any Zikas Yevamin at all. In the next sugya on Amud Beis, we have a big sugya of contraceptives, which the Gemara refers to as Meshamesh B'moich. And we also have a discussion of Shoymer Pesoyim Hashem, which is a halachic principle that Hashem protects the simple, even in contexts in which I might have otherwise thought that it would be halachically viewed as a sakona. The sugya of contraceptives and the details here, it's a big and complex discussion, and of course any question of halacha needs to be discussed with a poisek, with a rov. We're going to go through some of the cheshbon here in the sugya and the rishayinim, and the way Rav Moshe Feinstein explains the Rishonim. The Gemara brings a machloikis here between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim in a case of the Sholosh Noshim. That's the three women that Chazal identified that it would be a sakana for them to risk becoming pregnant, which is a katana, a meinika, and a meuberes. Those are the three women that Chazal identify that is a potential sakana if they might possibly risk becoming uberes. So therefore, Reb Meir's opinion is that these three noshim have a heter, the way Rashi explains it, that they have a heter to meshamesh b'moich. The moich is a wad of cloth which they place in the oisam mokam, and this way, there's no concern that the zera of the ish is going to go through and possibly make her into a ibur, make her into a muberes, which might generate a sakona. So Reb Meir says, the way Rashi explains, that these three women have a heter to meshamesh b'moich with this wad, whereas the chachom, they disallow this and they hold it as osur even for these women to meshamesh b'moich, as Rashi explains, as Rashi's pshat, because the Chachamim speak of this idea of shomer pesoyim Hashem, that Hashem protects the simple. The general idea, we'll see a little more on this is that Sharon Pesoim Hashem means that where it's the derech ha'olam to do a particular activity, and this is considered by people to be the norm, to be the normal activity that is done, so there the Rebbeinu Shalom gives a special shmira to it, and we don't necessarily treat it as a sakana. That's why the Chacham, the Rashi explains it, they hold that these three notions cannot be meshamish, they're asura, according to Rashi's understanding, because we have anyway the concept of Sharon Pesoim Hashem, he protects the simple, so we do not treat it as a sakana. In the context of the sugya, there is a big machloikas here in the Meforshim as to whether we are discussing a moich b'shas tashmish or a moich shala'acha tashmish. Do you place the wad during the time of the ma'isa biya, which is obviously more effective in blocking the zera, or do we say that that's a given, that we would never permit a case of a moich b'shas tashmish, and the whole question of Meir Nechum over here is only placing the moich acha tashmish in an attempt to get rid of the zera ho'ish. Rashi's simple language is mashma here, and this is the way the Mordechai explicitly states that Rashi intended to say this, that we're talking about a case of moich b'shas tashmish, and even that case, Reb Meir is saying that the sholosh noshim, that it's a sakana, that they might become pregnant, that they are meshamash as a moich b'shas tashmish. This machloik is, if that's what Rashi meant, but this is explicitly stated by the Mordechai, that that's the pshat in Rashi. These three noshim as a sakana, for them to potentially become a ubes, and therefore, the Chachomim, the Reb Meir says that they are meshamashoyt v'moich. B'shas tashmish, and the ma'isa biya is done with the moich in place. The Tosfos HaRosh over here asks on Rashi, he says, it's loy mistaver. This is not logical to say such a thing. She'atiru le'elu hanoshim b'shvil simchas oino. That the Chacham, why would the Chacham go ahead and be matir tashmish and moich when this is an act of a hashchosas zera? This is a destruction of seed, which normally is also a hashchosas zera. So how are the Chacham going to be matir a moich b'shas tashmish? It's not mistaver the Chacham should make on such a thing just because they want to have a simchas oino, that the man has this conjugal achrayos to his wife, to mitzameach her, and the simchas oino. So what? That's an insufficient reason to matter hashchos hazera, a ma'is a bia, on top of what the Rishon referred to as a bia on the eitzim v'avonim, because there's a moich in place, a wad in place during the shas tashmish. Says the Tais HaRosh, motav shelo yisham shu klal. There's an alternative over here. Let them not have any relations at all. It's not like there's some kind of an absolute imperative that they have to have relations. Let them not have relations. If it, in fact, is a sakona, in these cases, for this potential possibility that the woman is going to become a mu'ubes, so it's out of the question to, according to a mayor, for her to enter into this sakana. So okay, so you won't, don't enter into sakana, but don't do an act of a bia at all. How are you going to tell me that they can do the act of bia just for a simchas oina and do it in such manner that it destroys the seed and destroys the zera ha'ish? This is the question, and he throws in that for a simchas oina we would not permit this act of the hashchosas zera. In fact, we do find in the Ritva over here that he says this very pshat in Rashi, that he says it in Rashi, then in fact loy choshev hashchos ha'zera, that's what he says, that we do not view this as destroying the zera, the seed of the man, because over here it's the mishum mitzvahs oino, that's what the verse says, mishum mitzvahs oino, since he has this mitzvah to have the conjugal obligation to his wife, so therefore the mitzvahs oino is going to permit this act which contains this destruction of the seed. That's how the Ritva explains Rashi. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the Sefer Igros Moshe that it's apparent that this svara of the Ritva to permit an act of apparently a ma'isa bia in a manner that the zera won't get through, and it's like equivalent of doing a hazroah on top of eitzim vavonim, like the Rishonim say, that the Ritva has matter this thing for a simchas oino, it sounds like a rather extraordinary idea, and it's clear that other Rishonim rejected it, says Rav Moshe, the Tosfos HaRosh explicitly rejects it. Rav Moshe infers from Tosfos that Tosfos rejects it because he says a whole different pshat in the sugya, as we'll see in Mitzvah Shem, Tosfos is not like Rashi, and we're not going to be matter at all to have this type of a bia with a wad, a moich in place, b'shas tashmish. But Rav Moshe says we certainly need to explain the Ritva's pshat in Rashi. It sounds like a pella. It's very nice, a mitzvah oina, but how is that matter an isur of hashchos hazera, which is a terrible isur? The Gemara speaks about a mesech tenido and isur deraisa. How is that going to be matter hashchos hazera just for the purpose of mitzvah oina? So Rav Moshe says that we really see in the Ritva and the way he explains Rashi, we see here a fundamental principle. And that is that the idea of hashchosas zera is not defined solely simply in terms of the procreative standpoint. That we don't just look upon whether it's going to possibly lead to procreation, to producing children or not to producing children. That's not the only possible factor that I look upon. Rather, I look in the holistic sense as to whether there's some impetus, some imperative, some reason that's pushing me that I need to have this act of a bia. Because if you need to do the act of a bia, then even if the zera is not going to produce any kind of procreative effect, that there will be no children, still it's not called Hashchas HaZera because there was a tzorech in the bia and in the hazroah for whenever the tzorech was. So for example, the Ritva found, in this case, a tzorech of a mitzvah s'ayna. To do it in such manner that the zera is going to go through and possibly cause an ibor conception is impossible because Rameya considers that to be a sakonas nefoshais. So that's out of the question. But on the other hand, to say that they're not going to have a bia at all, that's going to be a problem. The Torah gives a mitzvah s'ayna like the Ritva says. Therefore, there is an imperative to do the bia, and you do it in such manner that you'll ensure that there won't be any possible conception because you'll have the moch in place in the oisim mokim. Therefore, says Rav Moshe, that won't be called hashchos hazera, hotso hazera, livatolo. The key word here, livatolo, says Rav Moshe, means livatolo from all standpoints. We don't just define from the standpoint of whether it will produce a kid. We look upon other standpoints as well. Is there some dechaf, some impetus that's pushing me to have the bia? Even if it's a mitzvah aina, that's sufficient to justify it, and therefore the hotzor hazera, the necessary hashchos hazera, is not going to be called levatola, and you're not over on hotzor hazera levatola. That's the shita haritva. Of course, as you could see, the Taisa Rosh and the Sishem Tais will see that they disagree, and they apparently define hotzor hazera levatola or hashchos hazera solely in terms of the procreative nature. That's why they hold it over here, since you're doing it in such manner that the moch is in place and it won't be procreative, the mela, therefore they consider hotzoras zera levatola, and they don't want to look upon the idea of being materit, because that's the one way to fulfill the mitzvah's ona in these circumstances. Tosfos, in fact, rejects the whole idea that we could learn this sugya by moich b'shas tashmish, because he learns, as we mentioned, that it's inconceivable that anyone would be matir moich b'shas tashmish. According to Tosfos, we're talking about that the ktana, the mulberis, etc., that they'll have a regular maisa bia with the husband without any moich, and there will be a moich shala achar tashmish, a wad that will be placed there after the tashmish in the attempt to wipe away the zera in the best possible way. This moich shala achar tashmish, Tosfos says, certainly from the standpoint of the man, is not going to be an issue because he did his ma'aseh bia in the normal manner. The issue is going to be, as far as the woman is concerned, does she have any problem whatsoever in placing a moich shel achar tashmish and removing the zera of the ish from the oisim mokim and removing their ability to possibly cause an ibor? Is there any problem mitzad the isha? The Tosfos, as he explains the sugya, Tosfos says that in fact a woman is not mitzvah in hashchosas zera at all, because Tosfos understands that the isur of hashchosas zera is interdependent upon the tzivoy of puruvu, of procreation. Only a man is mechuyev from puruvu, like the Gemara later in Yevamos Darshan from a pasuk. A woman is pater from puruvu. So just like the woman is pater from puruvu, from the positive mitzvah of procreation, of having children, so too likewise the woman is also pater from the isur of hashchos hazera, of wasting seed. Therefore, Tosfos says that this placement of the moich ba'oisa mokam after the tashmish, which is done by the isha, by the woman, is surely not osur at all, according to anybody, because there's no isur. The woman is not mitzvah in hashchos hazera. The thing at issue in the Gemara here is Reb Meir considers it a chiyuv to have a placement of moich ba'oisa mokam after the tashmish, in this case of the ketanim uberes, because of the potential sakona in the pregnancy. The Chum don't consider it a chiyuv to place a moich ba'oisa tashmish, because they say you could rely upon shomer pesoyim Hashem. That's the shaila as to whether there is a chiyuv, but as far as whether there should be possibly some isur to place a moich after the tashmish, which according to Tosfos Shita, that's what the sugya is talking about. If after the tashmish, that Tosfos says that nobody is going to hold that there is any such isur to place the moich after the tashmish. Reb Chaim Oizer Grzensky in the Tshuvas Achiezer was asked a shaila about a woman whom the doctors had said of her that the pregnancy and delay to the giving birth would be a sakona for her. And therefore the question was asked of Reb Chaim Oizer as to whether this woman would be able to be meshamesh v'moich, to utilize some sort of a cloth during the tashmish to ensure that the zera would not get through, because the pregnancy and the leida could be a sakona. Reb Chaim Oizer brings down that Reb Akiva Eiger in a tshuva was asked a similar shaila, and he paskin that it would be osur even in a case where the doctors say it would be a sakana. Rabbi Akiva Eger's reason is because according to Rashi's understanding of this Gemara, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim are arguing about a similar case of moich b'shas tashmish, so use moich during the time of the tashamita, in a scenario in which the ibur and the leida could conceivably be a sakana. We have the ketana, the mu'uberes, and the meinika, in which in each of these cases the pregnancy could be a sakana, which is why, in fact, Rashi learns Reb Meir is matir to utilize the moich b'shas tashmish. However, the Chachamim asked it because they say that we must rely upon shemir pesayim Hashem, that Hashem protects the simple, and not look upon it as a sakana, even if medically speaking it could lead to a sakana. We still say that we rely on the protection of Hashem and not use the moich. So Bekevegis said that Huadin, in these cases where the doctors say that the could be a pregnancy, could be a sakana for the woman, we still have to go with the chachamim and answer utilizing the moich b'shas hashmish, and instead go with the shemir pesayim Hashem, that Hashem protects the simple. Rabbi Chaim Moizer says on this that this is a very, very difficult shver psak. If there's a concrete sakana, what kind of thing is that to simply rely upon the assumption that Hashem would protect? The halacha is that we have a chuyav to be chayish, to worry about a potential sakana. The Gemara is saying, in fact, the way Rashi is understanding, that the chacham amachayev you to rely upon the shemir pesayim Hashem and not worry about the sakana. So Rabbi Chaim Moizer says we must learn that in this case of the ketana, the young girl, and the other cases, that it's only a chashash rochoik. It's a very unlikely, remote concern that it could lead to a sakana in the ibur. And that's where we say, according to the Chachamim, that we have to ignore the chashash and Hashem protects us. However, if there would be a real, concrete, manifest concern of a real chashash sakana, there's no question the Chacham would agree with Rabbi Meir and not tell you to rely upon Shem Epsoyim, and instead to utilize the Chaim Moizer Tain, according to the different approaches, you could be able to utilize even the Moich B'Shas Tashmish. That's a Chaim Moizer. The question is a very complicated one. Today it's a whole different Shiloh where there are pills, because the pill does not stir, it does not disturb the concept of Derech Tashmish that we spoke of earlier, as opposed to the Moich, which is emplaced in the Oysa Mokam and therefore removes the Derech Tashmish. The pill is a different Shiloh, it's more lenient, and these are complex issues. Al Koponim, a big part of this psak of Rabbi Chaim Moizer is dependent upon understanding the parameters in which we apply the rule of Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. When do we say this thing? Don't look upon it as a true sakana, because we have the concept that Hashem protects the simple. So this Rabbi Chaim Moizer is clearly saying we only apply it in a case where there's only a remote concern. There are clearly different approaches on this. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, in a well-known tshuva that he wrote decades ago about smoking, whether smoking would be asur or mutter, since medically it's said to be a damage and it's a danger in a number of areas of the medical field. So Rabbi Moshe paskened over there, the Me'ikor HaDin, smoking is mutter, although he says it's not roy to smoke, it's not proper. And the reason Rabbi Moshe gives is that he says, because medically, a majority of the people who smoke are not harmed by it. And since it's only a minority, therefore we could rely, Rabbi Moshe applies the rule of the Gemara, of Shem Epesayim Hashem, Hashem protects the simple. And therefore, Rabbi Moshe applied this as long as you would not have a majority, but rather only a minority of people harmed by the smoking. Apparently, it seems for Rabbi Moshe, as long as it's still less than a roiv, as long as it's a minority, we could say that the smoking would not be awesome, Me'ikar HaDin, because of Shem Epesayim Hashem. I have the protection of Hashem. Rabbi Moshe explains it has to be something which is the normal habits of people, and it's considered normal in society that people smoke, which was certainly the case in those days. And therefore, Rabbi Moshe said, under those conditions, we could apply Shem Epesayim Hashem, as long as it's only a miyot that are harmed. In today's times, great Talmid Chacham have argued that according to Rav Moshe's rule, we would have to ask for smoking, because today the doctors say that the majority of people who smoke are harmed by it. But that's as far as the specific question of smoking. But conceptually, we see that Rav Moshe works with a different approach, conceptually, to Shem Epesayim Hashem than Rav Chaim Moizer. Whereas Rav Chaim Moizer said that as long as it is a real specific concern, and not a chashash rochok, not a remote concern, we do not apply Shem Epesayim Hashem and treat it as a real sakana instead. Rabbi Moshe, on the other hand, says as long as it's still only a miut, even if it's a real concern, and you could very much get harmed by the smoking, as long as it, in his case, and the way he's addressing it, that only the miut of people who smoke are harmed, you would still apply the Shem Epesayim. And different approaches in the Poskim as to when and where I apply this ruling of the Shem Epesayim Hashem. Finally, at the end of the daf, we begin to discuss the sugya of Bonam Harehin Kesimonim, which continues in Mitzvah tomorrow. We'll begin to discuss it today. The Gemara tells us that a young girl who has a rabbinic marriage to her husband normally could do a miyun, like we discussed earlier, but once she gives birth, it's impossible for her to do a miyun, to reject the marriage, because the giving birth is a demonstration that she is a gedoyla. It's just as if she had brought simonim. Simonim are the two hairs, which are the physical signs of godless, of adulthood. And even if she doesn't have these two hairs, the signs of godless, and even if she doesn't have the shonim, normally you need shonim visimonim, the 12 years by a case of a girl, plus the two hairs. Over here, she lacks the shonim and lacks the simonim. She's a young girl, doesn't have the two hairs. And afapikain, the bonim, the fact that she's given birth, is an indicator of godless. It shows she's a gedoyla. And a meila, at that point, her marriage is vidas d'oraisa, and she's no longer able to reject the marriage and to do a miyun. This is the way that Tosis and most Rishonim learn. As we mentioned earlier today, Tosis understands that the ibur bonim, the fact that she became pregnant with a viable child, is already a sign that she is a gedola. Whereas the Rambam, as we mentioned earlier, the Poskim Medayik from the Rambam, that he understood that leidas bonim is kisimonim, the actual act of the giving birth. Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Dibros Moshe writes that Rashi apparently had a different approach to this sugya than most Rishonim, because Rashi's expression here at bonim harei Kisimonim, Rashi says, Hilkach, therefore, Ein lecha yoledes ma'enes. It's impossible to have a case in which a girl who gave birth could do a miyun and reject the marriage afterwards, afilu hikatana, even if she is a katana. What do those last three words mean, says Rav Moshe in the Dibros Moshe? Afilu hikatana, even if she's a katana. Isn't it so that according to Tosfos and the other Rishonim over here, the Rambam and others, doesn't it so that the moment that she has the bonim, the giving birth, that's an indicator she's a gedola, even if she's lacking the normal requisite number of years, the 12 years of age and the thyros, but still she's a gedola under the raisa level. So what does Rashi mean, therefore yoldus kempe mavayin, even if she is a katana? So Rav Moshe says that it is apparent that Rashi rejected the view of most Rishonim. Rashi understood that the dinim of Shonim and Cyrus are absolute and non-negotiable, and therefore this girl who doesn't have the requisite number of years and the two hairs, and therefore she's not a gazola d'iraisa. It's just a din in the inability to mind, specific to the sugyo at hand, that she can no longer reject the marriage because she looks like a gedoyla. It's to the onlooker, it appears that she has the qualities of a gedoyla, because how in the world she managed to give birth? She must be physically mature, and therefore to the onlookers it seems that she's a gedoyla. So the Chazal says she can no longer be a mayan, even though on the Torah level, says her Moshe, the Das Rashi is, she's still a katana, a filu hiktana. Tosfos and other Rishonim don't go with that, and they say that the Gemara is saying that bona kesimona means that even if she's lacking the shonim and lacking the syros, she lacks the usual qualifiers to make her a gedola. She's still, in and of itself, the fact that she gave birth, according to the Rambam, the fact that she got pregnant with a viable child, according to Tosfos, these are indicators that she is a gedola d'oraisa. And we'll begin to discuss this subject today. Mitzvah will continue tomorrow. It's an important and big subject. The Tshuvas Maharit asks a very basic question about the sugya. He says, it seems that the Gemara is saying that bonin could be substitute somehow for shonim and sairois. Oh, but what's the story? Aren't those a halacha mishmesina? Isn't it absolute, says the Maharit, that you must have those two qualifications? They're what generate the godless. Without shonim, without the 12 years, without the two hairs, you don't have godless. What are we saying, that just because she gave birth, so all of a sudden it must be that she's a gedola? And the Maharit takes out of here a very important point that we'll discuss in Mitzvah Shem more tomorrow. He says that we see that, you know why, says the Maharit, these things are called simonim. Shonim visimonim. What's a simon, says the Maharit? Whenever we speak of a simon, we're talking about something that does not generate a din, rather it is a giloy that an existing din pertains. If I lost something and somebody finds it, I give him a simon, then it's a giloy that reveals that the thing is mine. What about, says the Maharit, by simone kashrus of a behemoth? As I'll talk about it as simonim. If the behemoth chews its cud and has split hooves, so those are the two simonim that show that the animal is kosher. Do those things, says the Maharit, do they generate the kashrus status of the animal? In other words, do they make the animal kosher because it has split hooves and chews its cud? That's not so, Zokter. The Gemara tells us in Bechoris, if I have a mutant child, a mutant offspring of a mother who has the split hooves and chews the cud, and the child is a mutant and doesn't have the split hooves, the din is, says the Gemara in Bechoris, that the child is kosher. It came from the mother that was kosher, and the child is kosher. Zokter Maharit, here's a clear raya, right off the bat, that she simonim of a kashrus of a behemoth are just indicators. They're a giloy
that the animal is a kosher type of animal. Even if in certain cases I wouldn't have the indicator, I might be able to obviate the need, like the case in Bechairis, where the mother was kosher. Likewise, over here, says the Maharit, these simonim, the two hairs, and even the shanim, the fact that she's a certain age, these are the indicators that the girl has reached a certain stage of maturity, or by the case of the boy, likewise, that he's reached the maturity. Since they are only indicators, it's possible to substitute with them with other indicators. In the case of the Gemara at hand, the fact that she gave birth is a very strong indicator that she has reached the physical maturity, and you don't need those other normal indicators of Shana Vesairois and Simona, because I have these indicators. It's a very strong one, the fact of the Bonim. Since, says the Maharit, the Shana and the Sairos don't generate the godless, they're just revealers of the fact that she has reached the stage of maturity, therefore I can substitute that with a different revealer, with the Bonim, which also does the same job and shows that she has reached that stage of maturity, and therefore she's a Gadola Da'iraisa, right? That's a Da'as of Toysis, and most Rishonim, according to Ramosha, this is rejected by Rashi, like we said, and according to Rashi, you must have Shonim, you must have Cyrus, you don't have it, or you could have at most a rabbinic apparent godless, which takes away the ability to mind, which is Rashi Shita, as Ramosha explains. We continue tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem.
You have been listening to the Shiurim of Shas Illuminated. Shas Illuminated is a non-profit organization dedicated to broadening the learning of those studying the Daf worldwide. If you would like to make a donation or to dedicate a Daf or Masechta, please visit our website at shasilluminated.org or call 203-312-SHAS. You can also email us at shasilluminated@gmail.com.